Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
We continue our series of programs on improving your finances at middle age, and how would you like to begin saving and investing money you didn't even know you had? Well, our first guest today, Denise Wilson, will share some of her money tips that have inspired more than 100 million people through TV, print, radio, and online. And Denise Wilson is a streetwise 25-year veteran in the banking industry. She's founder of a financial education company, has lived on her own since age 16, has done more than 100 live TV performances, and she's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Money Magazine, Chicago Tribune, just to name a few. And she has her new syndicated TV program, Money Made Easy. And she's author of the new book, Money Starts Here, Your Practical Guide to Survive and Thrive in Any Economy. And we're very proud to have her with us here today. And hello, Denise, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
It's so great to be here with you, Roy, and it's actually Denise Winston. I know a lot of people want to call me Wilson, but it's actually Denise Winston, like, you know, those icky cigarettes.
Yeah, I knew it was Winston. I don't know why I wrote down Wilson here.
Like I said, it's either Denise or Diane, but it's actually Denise Winston. I'm happy to be here with you, especially in all of your listeners out there. You know, being in middle age or of a certain age is a great time in our lives.
Yes, it is. But let's begin with your amazing personal story. How did you learn to manage money when you were alone and on your own at age 16? That was very impressive to me when I...
Well, you know, when and this is why I pretty much do what I do, because at 16 and when you're working four jobs, going to school and trying to survive, you know, and make a lot out of the very little that you have, you become very street smart. And I feel like in our economy, you know, I started doing my founded my financial education company in April of 2009, just in the middle of the crisis. And I really felt like, you know, I'm just like everybody else. We're never taught about money as a life skill. Where we get our first job, we go to work, we get our paycheck, and we start spending and going to work and spending and getting this vicious cycle. And, you know, thank goodness at a young age, at 18, I actually started working in the bank and seeing how the rich got richer and how the poor got poorer how the bank made its money.
You think of how the normal teenagers are, you know, running up the credit card on dad and mom's account or whatever and don't really have much concerns over managing money. I like the quote of one of the reviewers on your book on Amazon said that this person had a CPA and an MBA in accounting, but nobody ever took the time to teach them for handling their personal money. And that's so true of so many of us that we just don't get that education at a young age when we should.
You know, and and right now it's tax time, right?
Yeah.
So you bring up such a great point. I've done so many presentations at CPA firms because, you know, a lot of these kids graduate with their accounting degree and they know the tax code, but they don't know anything about managing their credit score, how to read loan documents. You know, they may or may not understand that, you know, how to lose 67% of the value of your car in the first 5 years.
Yeah.
There's all these little things that are real world, street smart, day to day essentials that unfortunately in our society we just plain leave out, and it's just frightening. And financial stress is so big, and, you know, we know it's the leading cause of divorce. It suppresses your immune system. It can actually make you stupid. New research showed that it cut 12 points off your IQ.
Wow.
So we're talking. This is a very serious subject that a lot of people, unfortunately, it's left out of their curriculum, or we simply don't know where or whom we can trust to get this.
Well, what are some of the top things we can do when we feel stressed out or confused about money? How do you get started in getting unstressed?
You know, the best thing you can do is realize that it's your money and you can avoid costly mistakes.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody out there is familiar with a GPS. And they're really, a GPS is really simple to use. And if you think about it just like that, the first thing that you do when you're using a GPS is you figure out where you want to go, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I'm not very good at that.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about being in middle-aged or midlife or a certain age, which I am, I'm always amazed at how fast time flies. And we are each going somewhere in the next 5 years. And the big question is, where are we going?
Yeah.
What do you want? If you want something, you cannot simply just expect that you're going to arrive and cruise around at that destination. The more specific you are, the better off you're going to be, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why it's so important. We always talk about visualizing the future that you want and visualizing it like it's in the present. So you're really placing yourself there, and then you start building toward that goal rather than just floating around through life buying a car or buying whatever.
Because those little decisions, and you know, you bring up such a great point with visualization. The best thing we can do is write down, good old-fashioned pen and paper. If you want something, you write it down, and that's your financial destination. So the next thing you have to do is stop and figure out where you are. What is your current location? How much debt do you have? You know,
The GPS. You got to go from here to there.
Exactly, and that's so you number one figured out where you're going, what your destination, your financial destination is.
Yeah.
The second thing you're doing is thinking about the GPS. Okay, well, where am I? You know, charting out your debt, charting out your income, figuring out where you are will help you do that next step, which is calculating how you're going to get there.
Yeah, that's the crucial next step that so few people move on to, I'm afraid.
Well, and there's some really easy things that you can do is in that calculating how you're going to get there.
Yeah.
You know, when you're using a GPS, if you make a wrong turn or there's traffic and you decide to take a side road, your GPS, what's it telling you? Recalculate.
You turn left at the next corner or whatever.
Right. It's going to basically say recalculate. And what you want to do is to be able to fast track yourself to those financial goals, whatever they may be. And, you know, like I said, it's tax time. You can use your – so many times when people get their tax refund, they start throwing up their hands and saying, woohoo, time to party. Let's go buy a new TV. Let's take a vacation.
And that should go right into the savings and
It should be, the deal is you've got to earmark that money in advance before that money gets into your hot little hand. Now, I'm not saying you can't take, you know, 10, 15, 25% and, you know, satisfy that urge to splurge.
Yeah,
but really,
you have definite plans for it and you've made the plans in advance and you know you're not overextending yourself. That's fine, you know, a portion of it. But
right, but really
using
that money to step on the gas, accelerate your efforts, and allow you to recalculate, because you're also probably got a raise.
Yeah.
And so many times people will get a 3% raise, and the next thing you know, it's just in their general account, and the money just goes by the wayside. You can also use your bonuses, overtime. You know, a lot of times there's camouflage cash sitting right in your house. You're looking at it every day. We got junk, right? We wanted to upgrade recently to a 70-inch smart TV, and I had literally been looking at camouflage cash, and that was my old plasma. That old plasma I was able to sell for $400.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And put that money towards, you know, a new TV. So, so many times there are these things. Again, it's your money, and we can avoid costly mistakes if we just think about strategically. And that's why, you know, my book is really a resource guide where people can open it up and say, okay, well, I want to do this. I want to buy a house, or I want to, create a savings, or I want this, or I want to get a new credit card, or I'm getting ready to sign a loan document. What do I do? And that's where the checklist and activities within my book are there for people.
Yeah, that's a great book to have, where you can turn to a particular area of the book and get an answer to a question that you have. Even on your website, I know you have videos where you can choose the you have a number of questions you can ask, and you have a short video answer for that I think is a really neat feature of your website.
Yeah, you know, some people would rather watch than read, and I have to say, you know, money can sometimes be a snore fest, and that is not my mode of operation. I really like to have a fresh new perspective and think about money in new ways. I'm certainly not the talking head on one of the big news programs. I'm more of the real world gal, and I get relevant information and give people financial snacks instead of boring information that'll make them snooze out.
Here's a question I'm chomping at the bit to ask. In your promotional material, you say there's one calculation that can change the way you deal with money overnight, and I want to know what that calculation is.
That calculation is so easy, and you get that in the form of looking at your paycheck. One calculation, seriously, is so easy to perform and will absolutely change the way you look at money and deal with money for the rest of your life. What you have to do is all you do is look at your paycheck, and you look at your net income, the amount that deposited to your checking account, and you look at the number of hours you worked, and you divide the two. And basically what you're trying to come up with, the number is how much you bring home for every hour you are at work. And we trade, our time is literally money when we go to work. We are trading our time for the form of payment. So when you know that your net take-home pay is, say, $25 an hour, all of a sudden you start thinking, well, do I want to work 5 hours to pay for those shoes? Or do I want to work an hour to pay for that premium channel upgrade? Because when you start quantifying it that way, and this is really where we as parents can be very helpful to our adult children as well, understanding the value of an hour of our time. And to me, you can basically do four things with your time. You can, or three things. You can spend it, you can waste it, or you can invest it. So if someone's looking for an incredible return on an hour of their time on their investment, reading my book in an hour gives you information that can save you $500 a month. You times that by 12, the book is $15, hour of your time. You're going to get, hand over fist the return on your time and your investment.
Yeah, that's a good way to put everything in terms of money. However, watching a lot of the TV shows at night is not going to earn you anything. So
that would be a time waste, right?
Yeah,
I guess
everyone has to do some time. I mean, I could guess you could call exercising a time waste, but obviously in the terms of the overall well-being and health and stuff, that's not a waste. So you can't worry about making money every minute of the day, obviously.
No, and Roy, you bring up a great, great point. I am addicted to exercise. That is my I think that everybody self-medicates in some way, whether it's watching TV or playing crossword puzzles or fishing, golfing, that's actually good for us to make sure we have good mental health, except for some things that waste time are not good for you. I think that it's important that we really look at the overall balance of our life. And you're right, money is not – we make between 6 and 10 financial decisions every day. When you look at the impact that money has on our life, it can't do a couple of things. It can't cure your sickness, it can't stop you from dying, it can't stop you from aging, and it can't buy your time.
No, that's true.
And so,
the over strenuous pursuit of it can age you quickly, actually.
Exactly. And so when you realize that money is just a necessary part and that you're going to deal with it, and that's the one thing that I have to say, my daughter is 24, and the one thing that I knew for sure is that she was going to deal with money every day of her life, and I needed to make sure she knew how to take care of herself. And so many times as parents, we want to rush in and save our adult children, and when we do that, we're risking our own financial independence. And it's kind of like when you're flying on a commercial airplane, they tell you if there's a crash, put on your own oxygen, then put on your child's. And so we have to keep that in perspective, and a lot of parents have actually bought my book and given it to their children as graduation gifts, and just to make sure they have some tools, because a lot of times our kids don't listen to us.
Here's your graduation gift, this $15-$20 book. Now you're on your own.
Exactly, and I'm going to wean you off of my 401k.
And you're not going to get a car.
Well, and it is so true. So many kids, they just simply, I can speak from personal experience. I overgave and oversupplied for my daughter based on, guilt as a parent. I went through a divorce, and you know, I didn't have as a kid, so I wanted to give her.
Yeah, you were probably overreacting all the tough times you had as a kid, and you tend to compensate with your own children.
And I think that's number one. I think it's normal, and I actually think it's reasonable. But when I had the realization that I was actually robbing her of her independence and her self-esteem by, whenever I would rush in and save the day, I was basically sending her a message that said, you can't handle it, and I need to save you.
Yeah.
And I really do think, you know, our kids are vibrant and strong and have the ability to do. I just think that sometimes we don't allow them the pain that we went through as young adults. We made it through, didn't we?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Well,
what are some of the most common money mistakes that people make without even realizing it?
Well, I definitely think that one thing that most people don't look at is the value of that hour of their time.
Yeah,
and again, how they spend their time. Whether they are, you know, spending it, wasting it, or investing it.
Yeah, like you could say, well, I'm going to watch 3 hours of TV tonight. That's like spending $45, to use your example, of $15 an hour, like net pay or whatever. And that's a pretty expensive, you could probably go to the movie for less than that. But then again, you'd have to add in your time on that, too. So.
Well, and you know, you bring up a great point. That would be a time waster, but let's talk about our time as an investment. You could, you know, we go out and we eat at a restaurant, and on that receipt, they have a little, the waitress has circled her name, and she says, do this survey, and next time you come in, we'll give you $10 off or a free appetizer, and you know you're going to eat there anyway.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, how long will that survey take you? Will it take you 10 minutes?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Probably not, but let's say it does. If it saves you $10 and you do that six times, that's basically $60 an hour tax-free money.
Yeah, you're speaking to the choir there, because my wife and I eat out all the time, and we constantly get coupons on the Internet from various restaurant chains that we've done surveys on and stuff, and so we often get a 2-for-1 or a 20% off and all kinds of nice little coupons.
See, and that 30-second to commute to your computer has paid off very, very, very nicely. And
yeah,
so, you know, when you do something smart like what you and your wife are doing, Roy, that just makes sense. I mean, sometimes I do find it justifies me being able to go out and eat out more.
Yeah.
but I do like to stack my savings. So when you look, you know, the common mistake that people make, to answer your question, is really not understanding how they spend their time and how that can pay off.
Yeah.
The second thing I think that most people don't realize is actually what's eating away at their income. There are basically three things: taxes, depreciation, and interest.
Yeah.
The interest is especially. Oh, it is.
On the mortgage, the financed car, and poor credit cards, and the people that max out their cards and pay minimum amounts each month and keep charging up to that limit are just being walloped with interest.
Well, and it's because we simply have not sat down and took a good look at what, you know, we work so hard and we're on this hamster wheel and we feel like we're so busy that we don't have time. So when somebody tells me, Denise, I don't have time to spend 30 seconds to go to the computer to find a coupon on eating out that'll save me $10, I'm like, okay, so you must make a lot of money an hour, right?
That's
so if you don't have time to do a couple of calculations, a lot of people go out and buy new cars, and I know it's really, really tempting, and there's very few circumstances where that might, you know, really work. But when you look at a five-year situation, somebody buys a new car for $5,000, they get a loan at 2.99%, you know, they lose 67% of the value of that $30,000 in the first 5 years. That's a lot of money to walk away from.
They lose a lot of money just when they drive off the lot.
11%.
11%. It kills me whenever you see an ad for Lexus, Cadillac, or any of these expensive cars. They always say just $349 a month to lease. They always make it sound really pretty inexpensive.
Well, it's all about the payment, and that's where we have to dig a little bit deeper and really look at the scenarios. So, like I said, there's a couple of scenarios where leasing or even buying a new car makes sense. Being an educated consumer and really understanding how much depreciation is costing you, you know, I do a lot of corporate financial wellness workshops for people that are early in their career, just graduating with a degree and making decent money.
Yeah.
And I just did a workshop for a major oil company yesterday.
Oh.
And one of the girls was here from Peru, and she got here and had no credit, so she went and promptly bought her a $50,000 BMW.
Oh, wow.
And had an 8.99% interest rate because she had no credit.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people are being preyed upon and being lured into, you know, things, and that's why I do what I do, because people just need some basic explanation of how our economy works and what is its expensive mistakes that are costing them that can be totally avoidable.
Well, here's something I want to do as soon as we hang up. I'm really intrigued by this. Tell me, how can I find disguised money hidden right in my own wallet?
I don't see anything in there except maybe one
$20 bill.
Roy, it's called camouflage cash.
Oh, I see.
Camo cash is hiding in your wallet. And let's see, we're pretty much everybody I'm imagining out there is of middle age, and that means that you have a driver's license, and it probably shows your age of somewhere about 55, I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
That means that you get all kinds of discounts.
Oh,
that means that you can get discounts, you know, at restaurants, at movie theaters.
Yeah.
That means maybe even camping at national parks. You might be able to, or know somebody that can, you know, have that discount. And we're talking substantial savings here. So even though it looks just like your driver's license, it's disguised as cash, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You also you might have a AAA card in your wallet that gets you discounts on everything online. You might have a library card. You might even have an employee work ID. I know my husband's work ID gives us a 20% discount on our cell phone bill with Verizon every single month.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, so there's camouflage cash. And on my website, as you mentioned, you know, you can get a copy of my book and all these tips are in there. But even on the blog and on the video learning page, there's some tips there. If you want some quick ones, you can certainly go there at denisewinston.com. But camouflage cash is a really big deal. It's hiding in your wallet right there in front of you.
That sounds great. Well, how can you add to your income by picking up money you're leaving on the table at work? I know so many of us work for somebody else for a living, and you indicate there are a lot of ways that you can increase your take-home pay at work by various methods. And what are some of those suggestions you had?
Well, the first thing that you want to do is make sure that you get your fair share of the bonus pool and of the raises that go around each year. And the way that you do that is you grab a file folder and you title it accomplishments. And I know, you know, as we get into our careers, we kind of get comfortable. But really, the way that we earn extra money is for us to prove our worth.
Yeah,
so anytime during the year that you have a significant contribution, or you make the company money, save them money, you raise money for them for a nonprofit, put it in there. So before you get your raise, before your bosses go into negotiation and allocate their raise pool, and I explain this in depth in my book, but just on the cutting note, you need to prove your worth in advance so they can fight for you to get your raise.
Yeah, that's true. And you need to do it pretty much throughout rather than just once a year go and say, look at all the great things I did.
Well, you cannot wait until you sit down to get your review because, you know, here's the interesting part, Roy. I was a manager of the bank for many, many years.
Yeah.
Do you know how much training I had on giving performance reviews?
I don't know. I know all managers hate to do that.
But that's because they are not trained. I would say that 90% of the managers that I deal with, they are not trained on giving performance reviews. So we as employees have to make our boss's job easier.
Yeah.
And we need to get them that list of accomplishments somewhere between October and December of the year before they start doing that allocation and negotiation.
Just to remind you, boss, these are all the good things I've done this year before you sit down and do my
exactly,
review.
Because once you sit down, that money is already been allocated. The other thing you want to do is really look at your benefits team and go to them and find out if there are any employee discounts out there that you might be able to get. Like I said, you know, for my husband, 20 bucks off of our cell phone bill plan is a substantial amount.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So that adds up to a lot of money. You also can get dining discounts, you know, gym memberships. There could be a personal trainer. There could be all kinds of benefits there that are hard dollar cost to you.
You know,
you
used to get a free annual physical at a company I worked for one time, which is certainly not cheap these days.
even you know, flu shots, you know, some of, I know a couple of people that I know, they get the shingles vaccination is free. Their hepatitis vaccinations are free. So there is a lot there, but we get so used to not looking them. Even flexible spending accounts for our medical as we get older, that is a huge tax savings.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of ways at work you can be, unfortunately, unknowingly leaving money on the table at work.
Yeah, that's true. Well, a lot of us at middle age have preteens or teens at home, and I know you're expert on counseling youth on how to be wise with money as they grow into the adults, but can you give us a couple of suggestions on how we should be training our teenage sons and daughters so that they're, when they hit the street, they're ready to be on their own and handle money?
Oh, Roy, this is where my passion meets the road. I'll tell you, living on my own at 16 really was a unique experience level for me to be able to share with these kids. Money is control, and like we've already discussed, it's 6 to 10 financial decisions. So as parents, what we have to do is understand that we cannot wait until our child hits the streets to teach them. We don't teach them to brush their teeth, you know, when they're 18 years old or 16-year-olds. We start when they're young. So immediately figure out ways to give them experience, whether it's an allowance, whether it's having them pay the bills, whether it is allowing them to shop for groceries, and sometimes just enlisting others. Maybe it's your banker, maybe it's your insurance agent, a broker, or maybe you have me come out and do a workshop for a group of teenagers, because a lot of times teens don't listen to their parents. I don't know, Roy. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Our kids are gone, but I knew what it was. But they didn't listen real well sometimes when they were here.
Yeah, but, you know, enlisting that outside party really has leaves a lasting impression on kids. And making sure they have a bank account and they have experience, because they're going to have a bank account for the rest of their adult life. They have to understand how bank accounts work and how much those overdraft fees are.
Yeah.
You have to understand about credit, about credit cards, about student loans, about earning money. You know, those are all key categories that we have to spend the time on as parents to teach them before they leave
home. One thing I think it's so excellent when, you know, give them a strict allowance, and maybe it's based also with performance bonuses for how well they do at school or whatever. But once they get that money, that's pretty much what they have to live on for all their outside, you know, clothing or whatever it might be, so that you're not always handling them a check when they say, oh, Saturday night, Dad, I need another $20 to go out tonight. You say, well, you've got your allowance, so, you know, can't you work things out?
No, you need to work things out. And I will tell you, on my website, on denisewinston.com, there is, on the products page, there is actually a Raising Financially Smart Children DVD and workbook. And there's a great activities and things you can do together and work with your child, because you're right. And the main thing we need to understand is that each child is different.
Yeah,
number one, there's a saver and a spender. And also some kids are more academic. Some kids may be, you know, money driven. Some kids, you know, want experience. Charity may be an issue. So there's, as a parent, understanding what motivates our children and how we can best get them involved in financial decisions on a daily basis and give them an experience. And that's what my DVD and workbook really provide parents with, a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, well, now you say that your website is what again?
DeniseWinston.com.
Now, I also went to a website, www.moneystarthere.com.
That will get you there, too. And the reason why I named it moneystarthere.com is because people will tell me, Denise, when it comes to money, I don't know where to start. So moneystarthere.com is where you can find the information as well.
Yeah, and is that the best place to go preview your book? And
absolutely.
Or I assume you could probably get that on Amazon or other places as well.
Oh, you can just type in Amazon, and you can type in Denise Winston, like Winston Churchill, and you'll find me. Or you can go to my website, and you can order the book there. And, you know, when you're on there, order an extra copy and leave that book at the office in the break room. Leave it at church. You know, give it as a gift, because you just never know when somebody's going to be open to hearing information from an unbiased, trusted resource, because we all know somebody struggling financially or getting ready to go out into the real world, often harsh real world of finance. And people are just looking for resources. And I also have to say, Roy, we all know something about money, and it would be my wish that people would share their experiences to help others avoid the costly mistakes that they have made, because we all have experiences with money we need to share.
And I would also recommend you look at that DVD and workbook for parents, Raising Financially Smart Children, because that would be, and also you have one for youth themselves, Money Start Here, Your Fast Track to Getting the Best Job and Dealing with Money for the Rest of Your Life. And that's a DVD series, right, for teens and young adults.
Right, and I'll tell you, that comes straight from my core upbringing. I'll tell you, knowing how to get a job, how to deal with people, how to manage your money, those are the key life skills that we've got to make sure that it's great that we want them to go have an education and get a degree, but if they don't know what to do with the money and how to keep a job or get a job after that, we've invested all that time and energy and money into a project that they don't know how to utilize the resources that we've given them.
Yeah. Well, I highly recommend that you preview Denise's book on her website, either denisewinston.com or moneystarthere.com. And as one of the reviewers said, it's not a bunch of high, boring theoretical material, like you said, people don't really want to read, but it's rather a number of bite-sized financial snacks to handle situations involving money that you encounter every day. And I like the way you can pick and choose depending on what issue you have. You'll find it probably in that book, and that's the kind of book I like. And once again, how can someone best obtain your book?
They can either go to Amazon and search for Denise Winston, or go to denisewinston.com or moneystarthere.com, and it'll take a link directly to Amazon's, where you can either do a Kindle or order the hard copy.
Yeah, it's real easy to find because I found it right away on their website. But and thank you so much, Denise Winston, for joining us here today, and best of success in selling your book and your DVDs and getting lots of us, both at middle age and our teenagers and our preteens, get smart before they get out in the real world and have all these credit problems and debt problems and things that so many people suffer sleepless nights over and cause marital problems and all kinds of problems.
So true, Roy. Well, it was a pleasure to be with you and everybody out there listening. And my wish would be that, you know, you buy the book, you use the tips, you share the information, so together we can all make this wonderful place, America, a better off situation financially.
Yeah, let's, and they will even send a copy of your book to people, members of Congress and some other people up there in Washington that might learn that you kind of have to balance your budget once in a while.
Yeah, you don't kick and scream and get your debt ceiling raised. You need to know how to operate within your budget. It doesn't work for us, it shouldn't work for them, right?
Well, thank you so much, Denise, and now let's go out and be smarter with our money in 2014.
All right. Thanks, Roy. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for coming. We turn next to a recurring challenge for so many of us at middle age, the battle of the bulge. Like me, do you ever get on the scale in the morning and the scale says you've gained 2 or 3 pounds from the day before? Does that tend to ruin your whole day, perhaps implant in your brain that you look fat in your clothes, lack self-discipline, even harm your self-confidence when you're interacting with others? Perhaps you'd like to throw out that miserable scale so you never have to get on it again. Well, to the contrary, our next guest, Linda Spangle, says you should become closest friends with your scale. In fact, the scale can be a fantastic health and weight loss tool once you change your relationship to it. And Linda Spangle is a registered nurse with a master's degree in health education. She's a wealth management coach, recognized nationally as a leading authority on emotional eating and other psychological issues of weight loss. And she's owner of Weight Loss for Life, a healthy lifestyles coaching and training program. And she's author of 3 books, and her latest we'll talk about today, Friends with a Scale, How to Turn Your Scale into a Powerful Weight Loss Tool. And hello, Linda, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you, and I certainly support that statement.
Well, if we recently gained a few pounds, or we've been trying for a long time to take some pounds off and we're not doing it, we may consider the scale an enemy. Do you have some tips on how to establish a healthy relationship with a bathroom scale?
Absolutely. And you're right that we do see it as an enemy, and it's partly because we think we've made all kinds of effort, eating right, exercising more, and then we get on the scale hoping to be rewarded, But then sometimes it doesn't do that. It might show up 2 pounds or no change at all.
Yeah.
And I think the number one thing is recognizing that you cannot use the scale for motivation.
Oh,
instead, it's just a tool that's one part of your whole program.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. The scale isn't going to do the work for you in terms of...
But, you know, we so many times think it will. It's like, okay, let me see, how did I do? And then, you know, we're so disappointed because it doesn't give the feedback we want. And what I see in people is when you have a day that you don't get that positive affirmation from the scale, it's so easy to go, then what's the difference? Why am I trying so hard? And then people will end up eating more or skipping their exercise and just saying, forget it.
Yeah, that's true. One of my least favorite aspects of the annual physical is the weigh-in. Why is it the nurse frequently loudly announces your weight? It's invariably about 5 pounds heavier than it is at home.
Of course.
And what's the best way to deal with scale dread at the doctor's office?
Oh, and you know what? That is such a common issue. I think a great percent of people, they dread going to the doctor because they know they have to get on the scale. And it just somehow feels so embarrassing
or something.
It's like, you know,
you're
like
revealing yourself.
Like I'm a failure in my life or something.
I especially hate it when somebody's walking down the hall and the nurse announces loudly what you're...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right that it is usually... a lot higher than your scale weight at home, first thing in the morning, before you eat, no clothes, all of that. So,
yeah, I always blame the clothes.
I know. Well, and here's a couple of thoughts that might help. First of all, you need to recognize that you are not required to get on a scale at a doctor's office.
Oh, I see.
We somehow think that we are. We think that we don't have any choice. But the truth is, the doctor may be required to write down and record a weight.
Yeah.
But you do not have to get on the scale to make that happen. So
yeah, you go in
things...
there for having a sore throat or something.
I know.
Totally unrelated to weight. And I always wonder why you...
Absolutely. So here's a couple of things you can try. First of all, if let's say you went for the sore throat and they say, okay, well, get on the scale, and you say, actually, I choose not to weigh today.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? Almost every single time, the staff will say, okay, that's fine.
That's
and so that way you escape it.
Yeah.
There's a couple of other options. Let's say it is for your annual physical.
Yeah.
You could say something like, I'd like to meet with the doctor first before I get on the scale.
Mm.
And then when you sit with the doctor, you could say, you know, this is what I weighed at home this morning, and I track my weight real consistently. Would you consider using that in recording it in my chart?
That's interesting.
And a lot of times they're fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, their concern about weight is, are you having health struggles or things that are related, you know, like blood pressure issues?
Yeah, they're concerned about a rapid weight change or something that's up or down.
Yep. But I think a lot of times even the most well-meaning physicians forget that it is so embarrassing to have, one lady called it, part of my permanent biography is now recorded. And many times it's really not a number that is close to the real number.
Well, I will say one thing. For the last few times I've been to the doctor, the nurse has been better about not saying it out loud, and I just don't even look at it.
My next tip for sure is that let's say that you do need to go ahead and step on the scale because it's your physical or whatever.
Yeah.
You can, before you get on, you can say to the staff person, I would like to not hear you say the number. I don't want to know what it is.
Huh.
And they'll usually go, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Or, of course, another option is, this is what I tend to do, look at the ceiling. And just don't look at the number at all. Completely ignore it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a little bit like if you get your blood pressure checked when you've been racing around and you're really stressed, it's usually higher than normal.
Yeah,
and we don't consider that to be our true blood pressure reading.
No, actually, they say you often have a higher blood pressure at the doctor's office.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but the scale is the same thing. You know, it's usually midday, you've got clothing on, you've already had breakfast or something.
Yeah.
So you just can ignore it and say, it's just not my real number, so I'm just not going to pay attention to it.
Well, win her five times, you should never weigh yourself on a scale. I got a kick out of that.
Those are kind of an interesting one. First of all, the most important one is any time you've been traveling.
Yeah, that was interesting. I never thought of that. But is that exactly?
Yeah, you know, we tend to, whether it's by airline or by train or car, we tend to retain fluids just from traveling itself. That can take 48 to 72 hours to get back to kind of a normal, healthy balance in your body. So one of my guidelines for people is always wait at least 3 days after traveling before you get on the scale.
I'll tell you when I don't want to get on the scales after I've been on a two-week cruise.
Well, and that's the next one, is any time that you've been on a vacation. Vacations or holidays, either one, and cruises are notorious for that. But again, okay, you've been traveling. You've done things that were out of your normal routine.
Yeah.
So your body's scale number will bounce up a ways, but that doesn't mean you don't put on 6 pounds of fat stores in a two-week cruise. You just don't. So instead, that's a time, again, you wait at least 3 days, and sometimes I say after a vacation, wait a week.
I always thought was a great time. After I've been sick and I've lost a lot of fluids, I run to the scale and think I'll be way down.
That's not a good time. That is a common one. But in my work, trying to help people become healthier about how they think about things such as their weight and the scale, that's just a way to kind of delude yourself, because you know you did not lose 6 pounds of fat stores just from 2 days of having the flu.
You just lost some fluids that'll come right back.
Exactly, and the next day it'll all be back. So if you've had the flu or you've been ill or if you've had even surgery or something, always wait. And again, I think a week is a good idea, because it takes that long for your body to get back in balance.
I see.
And then the last one that I always recommend, I just say when you feel really vulnerable. If you've had, you know, a really stressful time, or you know that you're just feeling kind of low in your self-esteem and your confidence, sometimes it's just wise to stay off the scale for a few days. Not ignore it forever, but give yourself a break and just simply wait until you feel stronger.
Well, what are some guidelines that can help you obtain the most accurate picture of your true weight? I know you had several suggestions there in the book.
Sure. I think the best thing to do for most people is to weigh yourself in the morning, first thing, on an accurate bathroom scale that you would have at home before you've eaten or drank anything, and before you put your clothing on, so that you have the same pattern day after day, is that you know that that's your time that you get on. And as to how often you should weigh yourself, you know what? I don't have any rules for that, because I think that everyone's different.
I
think that a lot of people do really well with just weighing themselves every day.
Yeah.
It's just a little way to monitor, okay, here's what's going on.
But you don't have to weigh yourself more than once a day, surely.
No, in fact, that becomes, again, sort of a delusion. It's like, I've had people say, I ate a cupcake and I gained 2 pounds. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. And you know,
like you say, never weigh at night, though.
Absolutely never weigh yourself at night. Because what you're doing, you're not seeing how what you ate today is affecting your weight. What you're seeing is just what your fluid levels are doing. And again, if you're going to be healthy and make the scale a friend, you do not get on the scale at night. It's almost punishment. See, that's how bad I was today. And I just don't think that's a good idea.
Well, where can someone preview and purchase your new book? We just touched the surface, really, of all the useful information in there, establishing a lifetime friendship with your scale. Where can somebody preview and get a hold
Certainly.
Of your book?
Yeah, the book Friends with the Scale is available on Amazon.com. It's also available as an ebook. You can also purchase it on my website, which is weightlossjoy.com. And it's also available in bookstores. So there are many options for how you can get this book.
I noticed on your website you have a lot of some free helpful information for somebody that's trying to lose weight also, so I would highly recommend that website. www.weightlossjoy.com. And you also are available for speaking engagements, training seminars. And do you do one-on-one weight loss consulting with people all around the country?
I do. In fact, I have clients all over the country. I even have some in Canada. And most of my work would be, I call it coaching, and it's done by phone. So
I see.
We talk on the phone at once a week or every couple of weeks, and I've had some amazing changes that I've seen in people who have had struggles forever.
Of how they changed when they changed their attitude toward the scale and started putting it in perspective. Well, what's the best way for someone to get in touch with you to explore those options?
Again, I would just recommend go to the website, weightlossjoy.com, and all of my contact information, my phone number and email is all listed there. That way it's an easy way. You don't have to remember to write anything down.
That's good. Well, I read Linda's book, and it's taught me to be a lot more realistic with my attitude about the scale, when to use it and how to interpret it, and how to take a long-term view of weight loss and not worry so much about day-to-day swings. For example, I was amazed to learn some of the factors that can affect the scale that really have nothing to do with actual weight loss or gain, like barometric pressure, stress, medications, or hormone changes. Those were really amazing to me.
Those are interesting, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It really aren't. And that's why you say you should keep a trend and keep track of your weight over a long period of time, and certainly don't... I suggest you preview Linda's book now while you still have a couple of months before you reveal yourself in a swimsuit at the July 4th picnic. And if you gained a few pounds over the weekend, so what? Stick with your plan. Now go out there and be your best, but enjoy every minute of it. And go to Linda's website and check out her book. What's the name of that book again?
Friends with the Scale. And it's at weightlossjoy.com.
Yeah, I love that title. Now go out there and be the best you can and enjoy every minute of it. And thanks a lot, Linda Spangle, for being our guest here today.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.